Hello, and welcome to Enough Wicker, a podcast where we laugh our faces off talking about our favorite television show, The Golden Girls. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we're on the 29th episode in the series, It's a Miserable Life.
Yes. Frieda Claxton, one of my faves. This one is really great. a fun fact is actually that actress was 59 years old in real life. They made her look like an old lady to play Frieda Claxton. And she was Philomena Bosco.
Philomena.
Isn't that wild? I mean, obviously they have some experience doing Estelle Getty's makeup to make ladies who are not that old look older. But I was very impressed when I learned that fun fact.
Yeah, and what a range of that actress that she comes back as a totally different character, which we see a couple times, but
yeah.
I feel like both of those two, particularly Frieda, are so recognizable. They're big guests.
Yes, exactly. Like as you're fond of saying, even a novice Golden Girls fan will probably know who Frieda Claxton was. So, what do you think of this one? Are you a fan?
Oh yeah, I love this one. I think it's so, first of all, like the caricature of Frieda Claxton of a neighbor that, you know, like the kids dress up as Halloween and is just so crotchety that you would have to like rock, paper, scissors to see who would have to go get the ball if it landed on her lawn. You know, like right. That is a type of person who lives on every suburban street everywhere. So I think from that point, the writers just did such a good job at, obviously she's exaggerated and she's over the top, but that character is universal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really interesting too, because like you said, it might be a little overblown, but it actually comes in part of the episode, right? Where it's like, you think that it's like, oh, maybe it's just a misunderstood neighbor, right? They actually write that into the script.
You're like, no.
No, you're wrong. It's really, she's just, as Sophia puts it, a scum-sucking crank, you know, and just plain rotten. But also this episode really covers, it's kind of one of the first appearances of the girls being so proactive in sort of local politics and activism.
Yeah, I love the like civic duty aspect of this one. And you're right, it comes up a lot, but it's them sort of deciding that that's what they're going to do. Like they take it. It's under their own accord that they decide to try to save the tree. And, you know, they're out petitioning and there's some questionable tactics going on from, you know, obviously from Blanche taking 3 hours to get one signature and needing to freshen up to get another. And Sophia just being so Sophia and getting the signatures of a bunch of dead people, which is hilarious.
Yeah, they're all doing it in their own flavor, right?
It's great.
It's very appropriate.
But it's cute to see them all rally behind this one cause. And it's a cause that you can, first of all, imagine them all believing in, but also a cause that would really need this type of involvement, because like nobody cares about the tree on Richmond Street, you know, except for the people who live there. So, I love that. I love that part of it, obviously. And it's, you're probably right. It probably is the first time we really see them like going down to, you know, the courthouse to get involved.
Yes, we actually see that set, which is amazing. And we'll talk a little bit more about sets later too, because, you know, as mentioned, like, woo, second season, big budget, really exciting stuff, you know, like using the driveway extensively, you know, in the front of the house that they now have as a set piece. We get, you know, big money to get to a courthouse and a funeral home.
Yeah, no, you have to, it does it all.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about it in the very beginning, right? So, you know, Rose, it's hysterical that there's already sort of the in joke about how St. Olaf stories are already obnoxious, right? Like she...
Indian corn.
But I just love, you know, they start the story in the kitchen and then they all just like hurry off and like she wasn't going to follow them into the next room, you know, but it's such a great continuation and just like the excitement of how it's already like it we transformed into a St. Olaf story, because as we mentioned before, there's already been these stories without St. Olaf being named. But now it's already sort of on the viewer to understand that it's just exhausting.
Yeah, these are these Petticoat Junction people that she has a personal relationship with all of them. Yeah, I want to talk about Rose in this one, because obviously she is, you know, such a focal point of this episode. First of all, this is the third person that she has been involved with their death. I would like to point out.
I like how you mitigated that of been involved with her death. Some might say killed.
Yeah, you killed Miss Claxton 3 days ago.
It's really interesting. There's definitely a fun on enoughliquor.com, by the way, we cite it, a link about how Rosen Island is a murderer. This obviously adds to that extensive case. But yeah, even before we get there, though, she's so optimistic, right? As we talked about before, it's like the caricature of this person, the crotchety old lady on the street, that she knows she has this super Pollyanna feel to her in this episode. Like, she can find the good in somebody, right? And it's such a wonderful, wonderful portrayal of the Rose character because, you know, her intensity, as we've talked about before, and we'll definitely talk about again, you know, comes into that competitive nature and the competitive state, but she goes off a cliff. So she's got like this endless patience. This is actually how like my husband Dennis is, like endless patience, a straight line. But then when you hit the end, it just is a precipice, you know, and that's kind of how we see Rose behaving here, where she's really just really trying, you know, she's using Danish. She's got all of her, you know, pulls out all the stops, and then she just fucking loses it.
Yeah. And it's so understandable in a way, because obviously, like, when she finally does snap, it's after she's just been, you know, as we assume, berated, and just, you know, this woman like took the Danish and now she's not going to do what she said she did. So like, right. That's the line. Once she, that prune Danish, man, that's like a,
seemed to do the trick.
Yeah.
Always does for me. No, and also Frida Claxton like shows up she doesn't have to show up to say, do what you were saying. You know, she shows up specifically to be against, you know, the girls and all of the neighbors that signed the petition, obviously. So yeah, she's a real scumsack and crank.
Yeah, that's what how awful do you have to be to go to court to make sure they tear down the tree? What?
Also, I just, even backing up from there, like a whole hearing just about this tree. It's like, oh man, simpler times, you know, especially
the Menudo concert.
Oh, exactly. Denied? Why is the application denied? That's a whole other alternate universe episode right there. So but yeah, so I also love from a civic standpoint, right, in this sort of like the pre courthouse scene when they're sitting outside, when they're talking about the Danish, and it's this whole like greatest country in the world speech, right? It's this whole Americana, oh my gosh, we're on top, we're number one. And I just love that it's cut by, like, you know, Dorothy's just snide line of like, what do you mean by that? It's like, oh, she slept with two of the commissioners. And Sophia's doing this whole, you know, bribing people with money is how we thought things done in New York. Oh my gosh, that works in Sicily and New York when Blanche sleeps with people. And it is just such a great reversal, and it plays into this sort of more progressive theme of like, all right, we don't need this sort of blind patriotism here. Like, this is how things actually work. And I just love that they have a nod to that. And of course, Sophia is like a perfect vehicle to make these little comments.
Yeah, no, I love that too, because I feel like this show does this a lot where, like, you think you know what they're doing, and it is, you know, it starts as a cliche, but they are able to just like kind of punch you in the face with like why that cliche doesn't work all the time. And that's one of these examples.
Exactly. You're right. And you know, it's very often, obviously, like Rose and Blanche, who play more of a sort of caricature in these like stereotypical archetypes of, you know, the innocent one and, you know, the slutty one, or like the Southern, you know, the Southern genteel attitude and everything that Blanche, you know, brings to it, with obviously Dorothy and Sophia grounding it. So it's just, it's such a good scene. And honestly, and then then Frida Claxton comes in and we get that whole hilarious exchange about the Danish, but she even has that line where she goes, there's nothing I hate more than someone who thinks every old person that lives alone wants company and a few kind words. You know, she delivers it so well. And she says that, and I'm like, oh God, you're talking to me like through the television. Like, this is me. I get so torn up about, you know, elderly people being alone. And it's just so funny. Like, she's just like, how many times I have to tell you that, like, this is my, what most people would consider terrible, but this is my life.
Yeah. Someone get her a dog. Like that old guy whose wife dies and then it's completely fine when Rose gives him the dog.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Also, wait, speaking of slutty, there's a joke. There's, you know, like, obviously the show is ripe with like sexual innuendos and stuff, but there's one in this episode that I thought was wild, and I never caught it before or maybe I just have and I didn't remember it, but when they're talking about orator, and like, she's like, orator means speaker. And
orator means speaker.
It's a pretty like in-your-face blowjob joke, which
absolutely,
yeah, really pushes the boundaries of even what I feel like we expect from this show.
Totally. It's very much, yeah, like the vibrator and the flu episode joke, right? Where you're like, oh damn, like they went a little further than I would expect.
Yeah, that got by the censors.
Exactly, that got by the censors. It's also funny because it comes on the heels of we're just joking sort of hypothetically, right, that Blanche is sleeping with two of the commissioners, but then we go in there and she's not only has slept with them, but she's like making blowjob references. It's great. I love it. And then we go, I mean, even just from there too, I think Rose's speech is amazing. Like, again, the fall off the cliff Betty White thing, and just where she says drop dead and walks away, she's like, go on, Dorothy, you know, like, oh, she's all riled up and everything like that. It is, the drop dead part is such a simple joke, but it is so good.
Yeah, and you're right, like, she does such a good job, because I can't remember what episode this is in, but there's one in the episode where they all are in the jail cell, where Betty White is going on and on about how the other people will laugh at her because she'll excel at her work in the laundry. Yeah. And, you know, it's these like really long tangential sort of outbursts, but
the
she
same
does
thing when they're on the desert island.
Yes, that's the other one, right? But and they're so long, and she finishes it kind of out of breath in a way that you really would be if you were speaking that way. And it's just really a testament to her talent that she's able to translate that much like short bursts of emotion that are so true to life.
Yeah, you're right. Especially when she says, sit down and shut up. Yeah.
And if you don't like it.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So the next part, I think, is really, you know, obviously, like you referenced earlier, you killed Mrs. Claxton 2 days ago, where, you know, Rose is just sulking. I die every time. Why do people die, Dorothy? And she is so exasperated already. And Dorothy just goes, oh, please, Rose, I don't even know why fools fall in love. And it's just one of those fun, like, little writer's room jokes that you're just like, man, they must have had that in the back pocket, you know, as some sort of response that Dorothy would have of just all these amazing puns. But again, as always, B. Arthur just delivers it in this whole exasperated way that makes it all the more funnier, even though it's a funny joke on paper.
Yeah. No, and they do a good job at sort of, like, translating what has been happening while we haven't seen them. Like we can imagine that off screen, Rose has been terribly annoying about this for days. Oh, you know, like, it's all she can talk about, and like, they're all just exhausted by it.
Exactly.
The scene in the kitchen is really nice. It's really funny. There's a lot of crazy, weird stuff. Like, Blanche telling the story of faking her own death.
Yes!
What?
It is funny because I think we've talked about this before. You know, you just sort of, like, you're on autopilot, like, when you're watching these things, but then you're really paying attention. You're like, that is actually a psychotic story. I also love she talks about her father. She's like, he could be a real peckerwood. You're like, dude, girl, you faked your death. And, you know, there are a lot of great highlights to that where she talks about being like a trapped panther. And Dorothy just goes, when I was 16, I had acne and played the accordion in a marching band.
Yeah, it's another tallest baby in New York moment.
Yes, exactly. I had a rash in my head.
Yeah, there's so many. There's so that story by itself is just, you know, like a real wild ride. But there's so many other like little twists and turns. Like, there's the Miss Magnolia pageant, which is what set this all off. But like, so many mentions of like childhood beauty pageants in this show.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my gosh, it's funny because like Blanche's Southern stories, if they only had like a label, you know, it's sort of like you have Sophia Sicily stories, you have Rose's, you know, St. Olaf stories, and it's not like we call them like Blanche's Atlanta stories or anything like that, but it's kind of interesting that it didn't take the form of its own to be sort of almost its own meme, right? And I think that's just because like Rue McClanahan, it's not just in her stories that she's hyper Southern, it's everything about her. So it just becomes the character as opposed to like this thing this character does. But to your point, a lot of her reminiscing stories are insane, particularly about her childhood.
Yeah, you're right. They should be just as, they're just as outlandish as St. Olaf. And they're exactly. The people in them, I'm sure, are frankly worse people in a lot of instances.
That is absolutely certain.
There's no way, like, Ernest T. Minky owns slaves, and everybody in Blanche's story is very suspect.
Absolutely. They even own slaves after it was, you know, post-bellum.
Exactly. Horrible.
Jesus Christ. Well, you know, similar on the topic, what's everybody talking about? Ma, I can honestly say I have no idea. Again, simple line, but just, it's incredibly delivered. The whole, I love the scene where Sophia, again, she sort of comes in and just owns it, where it's like, we'll pop for her funeral. Like, it's just like she comes in talking all business, and she's just like, you know, you show respect for human life, no matter how wretched it was. You know, any idiot knows that. And,
I knew that.
Yeah, see? But it's such a, like, another example of her coming in as, you know, the matriarch of this group of matriarchs and saying, all right, no, this is what you do. Like, this is how we're going to handle things. It's, you know, it's kind of the same exact, you know, way that you see her acting when, you know, when Stan needs heart surgery. And she just is like, this is how it is. What's your plan? What are you going to do? And, like, she just goes into action here, which, of course, you know, gets us this really interesting twist that, of course, the first time I watched this episode, I was just like, oh, you would do that? I guess so. That's actually a really decent thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, if you believe in funerals and all that, but you know what I mean? Like, right. Even if it's a memorial type of thing, but.
Yeah. And it's nice. I think that she has to be, it has to be from her, you know, cause she's like this old world. It's kind right. of a, and that's how she justifies it too. Is like, it's a Sicilian custom. It's good luck to bury someone you hate. And Dorothy's like, you feel bad. And
yeah,
it really works, because I'm sure the rest of the girls, obviously Rose is like super guilt stricken, but like the rest of the girls do feel bad, but maybe either they don't feel bad enough to raise this idea, or it just doesn't occur to them. So it needs, yeah. You have to have somebody who's like so far removed to suggest this idea. True. And you know, what's funny, like, I think that this episode is great, but I always think of, I think of Frida Claxton, and then I think of the pafuneral bit as like two separate things, you know, and they're both so strong and so good. But yeah. It's funny to watch this one again, you know, like as a scholar at this point, and be like, wow, they're both in the one episode, and they're both two really separate funny scenes. But like the funeral home scene is a classic. It's so good.
It's amazing. And like I said before, I think even just like the set kind of blows you away in terms of just what we've seen previously in the show. You know, you're just like, man, like this wasn't, you know, was this from another sitcom that they borrowed? Like, maybe, what's the deal? But you're right. It actually feels like this whole separate episode, because it's just so rich with so many funny lines, but also, like you were saying before, this through line of sort of like this moral decency, like whether or not you actually believe that a, you know, God is watching and God needs a funeral and you're supposed to be doing something nice for your fellow man. Or crotchety old lady neighbor, it's still interesting, even from the topic of closure from the girls themselves, right? And that's what Rose is really looking for. Rose is like, I have to do something to sort of atone for this. And it's like, yes, it's about sort of being decent to your fellow man, but it's also about feeling guilt, right? Like, Ma, you feel bad. Like that line, like you said, Dorothy kind of calls her out on it. It's like, this is what we do in our society as a way to provide closure for a death. So it's a different kind of death, because it's somebody you didn't really care about. But, you know, I mean, it's just an interesting little scene. So obviously they all decide, and then we meet Mr. Pfeiffer.
This bit is so brilliant, and it's so simple. Yeah. You know, you could read this on the page and you'd be like, eh, I don't know how this is going to land. Like, yeah. The funeral, I don't know. But it is so funny. From the beginning when they walk in to, like, when Dorothy says pafuneral to what he says, that, you know, the three of you planning ahead for mother. There's like a break, you know, because the audience is laughing, and Estelle Getty takes a couple steps toward him, but she's, you know, so calm and yeah. still like so like holding her purse, and she's like, how would you like a punch in your face? And it's the choice to take the couple steps adds so much to the delivery of that line.
Yes, yes.
It's hilarious. The whole scene is just like so many laughs.
It's also, I learned from that, you know, the Jim Colucci book that we're super big fans of, is that B. Arthur really loved this bit. Mm. And I think, to your point, you could see something on the page that would be okay, but like at table read it would just slay because they're doing things like the pausing and the, you know, like making these very concerted choices of delivery. And again, like even like Bea Arthur's face when she says pafuneral, like she just has this like she almost like swallows it, like, oh god, I, you know, I'm so tired of this already, but like, you know, I this ridiculous name, can we just get on with it? And it's amazing how in one line or even just in one look, and we talk about their physical comedy all the time, right? You can just deliver so much more than what's written down.
Yeah. And there's another, this scene is just so funny. There's another part, you know, we talk a lot about how some dated references really carry through. And yeah. I think in spite of the fact that Bill Cosby is an awful, awful human, that true. When the show was on, it was such a cultural phenomenon. And so yeah. when he suggests Thursday night for the yeah. funeral, and they're all like, oh God, no, not Thursday. I can't Thursday. And they're all like, oh, right, the Cosby Show. Like, that's so funny. And to like capture that moment in time in that way and not make it like a huge joke, you know, like it's just like a little yeah. blip in this scene. Just so smart.
It's actually kind of like even one of the weakest blips in this scene, which is really a testament to how funny it is. Also, like, they're like, oh, so what happened? She killed her. Rough neighborhood. Like, and yeah. he just blows by. I mean, a lot of credit is due to the actor who plays Mr. Pfeiffer, because his, like, his choice to play this guy, he has, like, the perfect amount of creep for a funeral home director. Mm-hmm. And also, like, obviously, as we see later, like, one that, like, really can't keep anything straight. They got people going in the wrong rooms. They hiring high school students and getting cremations. It's just all over the place.
Celia Rubinstein. Who? Oh! So good.
Okay, so that scene. Okay, first of all, the woman who is giving this speech is amazing, and I think she's a great actress. Like she really makes you believe that like there was this hidden. It's such a perfect bait and switch, right? That there was this hidden like secret about Priya Clarkson, but actually no. Like each time you're set up and you fail thinking that this woman had like this streak of goodness. Even in the scene where like Sophia is sitting, you know, going such a tragedy, you're just like, oh my god, she's getting so, you know, like choked up about this, and she's just listening to the baseball game. It really reminds me too is I mentioned this before, but I, you know, I've watched the Golden Girls with my grandmother sometimes, and my great aunt also lived with her, and you know, it was a whole like sort of childhood little second home thing that I had. And my great aunt for many, many years after was just so stubborn, like many of my family members, and refused to get a hearing aid, even though she was completely deaf. But she, I guess being like super cheap, or I guess as a sort of weirdo compromise to herself, she got this like probably no more than like $6.99 like dollar-ish kind of like dollar store-ish but a little bit more expensive kind of like box receiver with earbuds, so I guess it was supposed to like take in whatever was happening around you and then just amplify it in your ears, but it looked like a Walkman, right? Like it was this giant piece that stood outside with these crappy earbuds that are just like, you know exactly what I'm talking about, just like mm-hmm. this broken thing. So when we used to have family reunions, she would just like park herself on the couch and like just be sitting there with this box thing, you know, in the middle of her trying to listen to what everybody else was saying to her. But I had friends, you know, that came to my family reunions. It really started early on being like, hey, there's free food at my house. My mom says you can come to this party. But my friends would come in and just like never talk to her because they just assumed she was just sitting there listening to the Yankees game. Oh my god, no, like this, she's not listening to like a Walkman or FM radio or something like that. She's not actually listening to baseball. She's just waiting for somebody to talk to her in the little squawk box like you're ordering drive through. Anyway, just really reminded me of that, just this little like, you know, cord running up your sleeve type of thing in a social situation.
Tell her what the doctor said.
Oh man, can't wait. It's so yeah, long. It's so long one. Off, but that one's magical.
Yeah, so she's listening to the baseball game, and it also the woman who's eulogizing Celia Rubinstein, when she finds out that it's Rita Claxton, she kicks the casket, which is amazing. Like what an addition to the, you know, just like furthers this the belief that we already have that Frida was awful. Like nobody liked her.
Yeah, exactly. Her reputation, you know, went far beyond Richmond Street, clearly.
Yeah. And also, okay, so you talked about this you mentioned this, but the mix-up, that's a pretty big mix-up, my guy, Mr. Pfeiffer. Like, we gotta...
No, seriously. I guess they went to the cheapest funeral home, obviously, but yeah. Seriously. It's a little much.
Not burying but also, Superman.
Right, and it's... But, like, obviously, you know, I mean, this is Miami, right? Death is a theme. And I think that this is kind of an interesting thing, too. Like, to your point about the woman who comes in talking about Celia Rubenstein, like, already knows about Claxton. And, like, it's just, yeah, Pfeiffer's got to get his shit together because he's got a lot of business.
Yeah. So they never should have hired a high school student. I feel like that's really true.
Exactly.
So then it's really interesting because it's kind of like, you know, it doesn't convey this message exactly, but... Every single thing that goes wrong is like, you know, this is what you get for doing good. Like, I can just hear, like, you know, somebody being like, you know, that's why you never go too far for somebody. Because, like, now they're stuck with these fucking ashes of this woman that they hate. Like, what are you going to do with them? You can't just... But, again, like, I feel like it had, you know, the theme of Rose being the problem solver, or Rose, like, sort of taking it into her own hands, really... From beginning to end, like, that's what this episode has. Like, it's a little bit in the background because there's so many other funny things. But, you know, she's ultimately the one who decides to sprinkle the ashes around the tree, which I think is a little bit ethically questionable, I would say. Like, you know, for all of these things that these ladies did to preserve Rita Claxton's legacy, like, they put her ashes in the one place that she obviously despised.
Yeah, she went to court to talk about how she despised it. I know, what's really funny, where it's like Rose is saying, like, you know, and now her life has meaning and all this stuff, and it's like, legacy, to your point, it's actually not what she wanted. It's like the closest you could get to, like, someone's actual, like, last wishes or a will or something of, like, hey, when I die, do this. It's like, you could make a pretty big guess of, like, literally she died defending the fact that she wanted this tree out of there.
Concrete's cleaner.
Exactly. See, yeah, they should have just sprinkled in a new, you know, like a new construction site. Now there's an idea. But yeah, it is funny, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is like they're looking for this closure, but it's really about their own personal closure, right? Like, you can pretend it. I mean, it's a gray area, of course, because you are mixed up in, like, good, you know, human ethical, like, you know, sort of this moral mumbo jumbo about, like, what happens when you die, and, like, how should people honor you, and how should people who are still living process it. But it's really funny because it's like, there's, you know, I was a philosophy minor in college, and not a major, because, you know, there are so many irritating people in these classes, I couldn't take it any longer. But it's interesting when you talk about, like, moral and ethical philosophy, it's like there's a whole school of thought that there is, like, not actually any selfless act, because even if you are doing something nice for someone else, like, you get that good feeling, or you get this, like, belief, if it's tied to religion, that you're, like, doing something good for karma, you know? So it's really interesting. And it's just, like, this whole idea of, like, Rose saves the day and actually does this whole, like, kind of brilliant idea politically to save the tree, which is just reminds me of, like, this Shady Pines hot plate discovery that happens later, where, like, sometimes she's just brilliant on these, like, really wacky, you know, kind of crazy thoughts, but honestly, for her and for, like, the Frida Claxton summary, it's just like, yeah, that's not what she wanted.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, I mean, that whole little cheaty Atagonia bit that you just shared, like, that's totally true. And I
hashtag
think
the good place.
Another show we love. It's true, in funerals, you're right, like, it depends, I guess, on what you believe happens when you die, things like that, but funerals largely are for the living to find closure. Like, it's not for the person who died. So yeah, it makes sense that, like, I don't think Rose ever intends to do these, like, you know, like, super morally complicated things that end up getting her what she wants, but ultimately, like, yeah, now her life has some meaning. She's preserving this centuries-year-old oak tree, and you know, she didn't want it, but guess what, that's where she is. Like,
that's where she is. And, you know, and now Rose Nyland feels even better about her third death that she's responsible for.
Yeah, small consolation.
And scene. Oh my gosh. All right, well, I think that's it, huh?
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, join us next time. We're going to discuss Danny Thomas's sexual preferences and renting porno movies on VHS. Take care, everybody.